abandon free market principles to save the free market system.
In a world of conventional confusion,
There will be time for them to make profits. Now's not that time.
Daddy, what do taxes pay for?
Oh, why everything. Policemen, trees, sunshine. And let's not forget the folks who just don't feel like working, God bless them.
Don't be afraid of your freedom.
Prepare to unshackle your mind.
An idea whose time has come cannot be stopped by any army or any government.
Your professor has arrived. Tom Woods. Beware, citizen. You are now departing from the world of allowable opinion. The Tom Woods Show.
And welcome, everybody, to the show on this Monday, October 7th, 2013. Hope you enjoyed your weekend, because now it's back to stupid reality again, but at least I can give you a half an hour of, I don't know, is this sanity? I don't know. I don't know what this counts as, but glad you guys are listening in. This week, I've got some good guests lined up for you guys. I've got, and you know, all different interests. So I got Mark Sisson coming up this week of the Primal Blueprint. And if you're not familiar with that, check out tomwoods.com/primal. Of all the interviews I've done as a fill-in host for the Peter Schiff Show, I have gotten more feedback on that initial interview with Mark Sisson than on probably all other interviews put together. People say it changed my life. I went from being sluggish and lethargic and fat to being energetic, trim, feeling great. Even though I'm 20 years older now, I feel just like I did when I was a teenager and so on. It's interesting to talk to him, so I want to get some questions from you guys. What should I ask Mark Sisson? And they can be skeptical questions. I don't have to throw them softballs the whole time. But make sure and tweet me your questions. Join Twitter just for the purpose of tweeting me your questions. Tweet them to me at Thomas E. Woods, and follow me on Twitter at Thomas E. Woods while you're at it. Also going to be talking to Dan McCarthy of the American Conservative magazine. I've been a fan of Dan's for a long time. He's a super, super smart guy. He's a person I always learn from, and I love people like that. Walter Block, the great libertarian theorist, will be with us this week. So I also want questions for Walter. What are your tough libertarian questions? What are the puzzles that you're having a hard time solving? Go ahead and tweet those at Thomas E. Woods as well. And finally, this week, I'm hoping again, I got a guy deep into the Bitcoin world. I don't want to say who he is just yet in case he turns down my invitation, but I want to have a program this week where we talk about the future of Bitcoin in light of the Silk Road shutdown and the hoopla about that. I think that's very important, very current. Let's talk to somebody in the Bitcoin world about that issue. So we're going to see if we can do that this week. Also this week, now when I say this week, I'm talking about this week of programming, not a seven-day period. I'm talking about a week of programming, I think in five-day weeks now that I have my own program. So this week, which means October 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th. That's the week. I'm giving away free autographed copies of my book Rollback to new subscribers to my LibertyClassroom.com website. So check out LibertyClassroom.com. And if you join it and you're new and you join it, use the contact page to say, hey, you bum, I joined, so where's my book? Send me my book, you bum. And I will send you a personalized autographed copy of Rollback. Rollback basically is my book from 2011 where I go through like the layers of an onion, and I start off with, you know, Obama's bad. People go, oh, yeah, okay, that's true. And then I say, oh, and by the way, you know, the federal government, you know, is responsible with the Fed for the financial crisis. Okay. And then there's a chapter on, by the way, the whole Fed needs to go, and here's why. Okay. And by the way, the military-industrial complex stinks too. And then the last chapter, before the chapter on what can we do next, is the chapter on, and if I forgot anything, we don't need that either. So it's really my book. It really should have been called, in fact, I actually angled for this, that Rollback should have been called Why Everything Should Be Abolished. So this week only, and I don't want to, if it happens a week later, a week earlier, I can't hear a word you're saying. This week only, join at LibertyClassroom.com, and I'll send you an autographed copy personalized to you of Rollback, because I have an excess of quantity in my inventory center, which is also my garage. All right, finally, the actual program for today. What is that I'm talking about today? Well, it's just me today, and I want to respond to something somebody sent me. Somebody sent me a note from her pastor, because she had apparently written some comment, I don't know if it was on the guy's Facebook page, whatever, because he had urged everybody to, you know, respect Abraham Lincoln, and isn't he a great hero? And she wrote something saying, well, you know, there's a little bit more to Lincoln than the seventh grade biography that we all read. It turns out he's a more morally complex and ambiguous figure than we may have thought. Well, of course, he's not having any of this. What? What? I mean, what are you, a left-wing pinko who hates heroes? It was that sort of response. And so I wanted to give an answer here. And I'm not saying this from the point of view of somebody who is indifferent to the issue of slavery. Obviously, I'm not indifferent. As a libertarian, that would be the most important issue, would be any form of slavery. I do want to keep that issue, though, for another program where I'll invite people on and we'll talk about the issue of slavery and the war. But the point that I want to make here is that the things that Lincoln did in the first year and a half had nothing to do with slavery whatsoever. He said that he was willing to amend the Constitution to prevent forever the abolition of slavery. He had no problem with doing that constitutionally. So all these things that he does violating the Constitution in the first 18 months of the war before he makes the abolition of slavery a war aim were all done for reasons having nothing to do with slavery. So you have to judge them on their merits. Not just, well, you know, ultimately he had to do that to end slavery. Whether he did or he didn't, that sure as heck isn't why he was doing it. So we need to bear that in mind when we talk about Lincoln. And also when we talk about Lincoln, it doesn't mean that we support the Confederacy, for heaven's sake, for the 8 gazillionth time. It doesn't mean that you support the Confederacy when you say that there were moral problems with what Lincoln did. In the same way, like sometimes you talk about, look at what Lincoln did. You know, he was an inflationist and he violated the Constitution and violated the right of habeas corpus and all that. And people say, well, why don't you talk about the crimes of the Confederacy more? Well, I think we've kind of all heard the crimes of the Confederacy a gazillion times. I mean, it's like asking me when I object to the Iraq War, why don't you talk more about how terrible Saddam Hussein was? Well, you know, I'm pretty sure anybody who's above the age of 9 and has an internet connection plus a brain already knows the problems with Saddam Hussein, but they probably don't know the problems with the U.S. government because they're sure as heck not reading them in the New York Times, and they're not hearing them in their classrooms, and they're not seeing them on the TV news. They're not even seeing them on so-called progressive MSNBC, which gets in lockstep on all the wars reliably and consistently. So no, I'm not interested in dwelling on that. But yeah, I mean, again, people already know this stuff. Although for the record, I'll say, yeah, the Confederacy was also inflationist and also nationalistic and had all kinds of problems of its own. Yet nobody doubts that. But the thing is, nobody is canonizing Jefferson Davis the way they are canonizing Abraham Lincoln, which is why we do need to be a little unbalanced in our response, because the propaganda is so unbalanced. So that's the thing there. So let's get into this thing about Lincoln now. And in order to do that, I want to share with you, I'm going to go through the whole thing. I want to share with you a history quiz from my friend Clyde Wilson. Clyde Wilson is a relatively recently retired professor of history from the University of South Carolina and the great, I mean, indisputably great Southern historian Eugene Genovese, before his death, said that Clyde was, without a doubt, one of the top 10 Southern historians in America. And here's Clyde's history quiz. It's a president quiz, and you have to score yourself in this quiz, okay? I'm not going to score you. You score yourself. And in this quiz, he's basically making you think differently. Don't just think the way your seventh grade teacher wanted you to think. Think afresh. Right, break free of the shackles of government propaganda for once. The government has every interest in the world in making you think about certain episodes in American history a particular way. If you think about them that particular way, then you'll be happy with the regime you have now. Because, good heavens, this regime grows out of this Civil War period, and thank heavens this regime is the heir to Abraham Lincoln, whom we all love. They need you to think a certain way so that you'll excuse their crimes now. I mean, look at how many times presidents will say, look, even Lincoln spied on people. Even Lincoln threw people in jail without trial. Even Lincoln, well, no wonder they want you to think a certain way about Lincoln, because his legacy gives them the keys to the Mercedes. His legacy gives them the keys to drive the Constitution over a cliff and your liberties with it. So, question number one. What American president launched a massive invasion of another country that posed no threat and without a declaration of war? What president raised a huge army at his own will without the approval of Congress? What president started a war of choice in violation of every principle of Christian just war teaching? What president said that he had to violate the Constitution in order to save it? What president declared the elected legislatures of 13 states to be combinations of criminals that he had to suppress? What president said he was indifferent to slavery, but would use any force necessary to collect taxes? What president sent combat troops from the battlefield to bombard and occupy New York City? What president sent the army to arrest in the middle of the night thousands of private citizens for expressing their opinions and held them incommunicado in military prisons with total denial of due process of law and had his soldiers destroy newspaper plants? What president was the first ruler in the civilized world to make medicine a contraband of war? What president signed for his cronies special licenses to purchase valuable cotton from an enemy country, even though he had forbidden such trade and punished other people for the same practice? What president refused medical care and food to his own soldiers held by the enemy country? What president presided over the bombardment and house-by-house destruction of cities and towns that were undefended and not military targets? What president's forces deliberately targeted women and children and destroyed their housing, food supply, and private belongings? What president's occupying forces engaged in imprisonment, torture, and execution of civilians and seizing them as hostages? Under what president did the army have the largest number of criminals, mercenaries, and foreigners? Who was the first American president to plot the assassination of an opposing head of state? Who had the least affiliation with Christianity of any American president and blamed God for starting the war over which he presided? What president voted for and praised a law which forbade black people from settling in his state? What president said that all black people should be expelled from the United States because they could never be full-fledged citizens? What president was the first to force citizens to accept as legal money pieces of paper unbacked by gold or silver? Who was the first president to institute an income tax? Who was the first president to pile up a national debt too vast to be paid off in a generation? Who is considered almost universally as the greatest American president, indeed as the greatest American of all time, and as a world hero of democracy? What predecessor is President Obama most often compared to? And as Clyde finishes, this is a take-home quiz. Please grade yourself. Well, I hate to be such a knucklehead here as to actually give you the answers. I'm sure you all figured out that the answer to every single one is Abraham Lincoln. And there's much more that could be said. I mean, I think there's actually a lot more that could be said there. But these sorts of things are generally not raised. Now let me read to you what this person's pastor wrote in response to this person saying things about Lincoln that, you know, maybe you ought to rethink it. The pastor says, I feel the need to reply to your post on my Lincoln quote. I feel it was very much uncalled for and out of place. I have studied Lincoln for years, have read books by those who knew him, and I'm aware that there are thousands and thousands of books about his life that are available. I understand that some will disagree with his method of saving the Union, but I believe his heart was sincere. Ugh. We were not living at that time and probably do not understand the context and culture of many of the decisions of the time. I find it sad that you would gravitate to a revisionist and antagonistic book in order to form a conclusion. These kinds of authors spring up from time to time, and they simply have an axe to grind or an agenda to promote. Some people simply hate the idea of heroes, and will do anything in their power to destroy those figures. I realize that all men are men and have failings, but Lincoln's greatness cannot be denied. It is not propaganda. I know you probably didn't mean to be rude in your post, but I found it inappropriate. Blessings to you. So this person who left the initial post he's saying, you probably didn't mean to be rude, but I found it inappropriate. However, treating you like a 7-year-old with an unbelievably condescending reply is absolutely fine. All right, so let's go through this here. I mean, this is really insulting. If you want to talk about something that's uncalled for, I mean, this kind of second-grade lecturing of an adult is totally uncalled for. I understand that some will disagree with his method of saving the Union, but I believe his heart was sincere. What does that mean? What on earth does that mean? Would he say that about any non-American leader? Yeah, sure, 1.5 million people wound up dead, wounded, or missing. And yes, civilians found their houses destroyed, their whole cities destroyed. They found that they had to eat rats and rodents in order to survive. Every principle of the just war tradition was violated, but hey, his heart was in the right place. No, he would never say that about anybody other than an American head of state, because we all know American heads of state have halos over their heads because they come from the awesomest country ever, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And we treat this country and its symbols idolatrously in our churches with the flag and patriotic songs, and we say that the American soldier is a savior just like Christ, and we don't see anything blasphemous about that. That's what's uncalled for. That's what's inappropriate. Disagree with his method of saving the Union. Yeah, a million and a half people dead, wounded, or missing. What, to save the Union? So he even admits it wasn't to end slavery. To save the Union. Talk about making an idol out of something temporal and secular. The American Union is a group of states, for heaven's sake. It's a group of states agreeing to abide by certain ideas and certain restrictions on their power and agreeing to delegate certain powers to a central authority. This is obviously a practical arrangement that may work and may not work and may be a good idea or may not be a good idea. Why is it automatically assumed that saving the Union is just so self-evidently necessary that turning the Union into a Moloch that simply consumes everything and everyone is self-evidently desirable? Why don't we stop to think, well, you know, maybe this propaganda I've been fed might be wrong. Maybe saving the Union and thinking of the United States as being one and indivisible and repeating the propaganda that a socialist inserted when he wrote the Pledge of Allegiance, maybe this is something I ought not do. No, instead, people like this, who I'm sure think of themselves as being conservatives, which is the funniest part of all this, they're basically going along with the French Revolutionary model of political organization. So here we have Christians who are thoughtlessly adopting the anti-Christian French Revolutionary model. The French Revolutionary said that France is not a collection of states, she is a single whole. And we can't think of France as anything other than that. Well, you know, the United States, remember all this talk about American exceptionalism and the United States is different from other countries. And yet, it's people like this, the so-called conservatives, who think of the United States as being no different from France, as being one single indivisible whole, and we need to sacrifice young kids to this insatiable God. This is insane, right? This isn't, what's Christian about that? So now you're cheering the centralizing principle of the French Revolution. What in the world do these people ever conserve, right? What they conserve is leftism. The leftists do something, and once they've done it for 50 years, the conservatives come along and call you a pinko commie for not liking it. It's incredible. I mean, so here you have the person, a person who actually understands what's going on, trying to correct this person, and this person just sits there and defends leftism and defends this idea that the union, a practical secular thing, is something we need to sacrifice, well, basically everything for. And it's beyond question. And anybody who transforms his country, violates the Constitution, commits all kinds of crimes, and leads to the avoidable deaths of countless people. And none of this had to do with slavery. That doesn't come till a year and a half later, so don't give me that. And to his credit, he did not raise the slave issue. This man is great. His greatness just goes without saying. It's astonishing. This is really astonishing. So let's go on. We were not living at that time and probably do not understand the context and culture of many of the decisions of the time. What does that mean? So we weren't living then, so we can't say that it was wrong of him to violate the Constitution over and over and over again, that it was wrong of him to preside over war crimes, that it was wrong of him to violate longstanding principles of the just war tradition. What does that mean? We weren't living then, so we can't say anything? This is a Christian pastor who's supposed to believe in absolute moral truths that are true today, true tomorrow, and were true yesterday and are true for all time? It's incredible what the Lincoln cult will lead people to. I find it sad, he says, that you would gravitate to a revisionist and antagonistic book in order to form a conclusion, because it's much better to gravitate toward a hagiographical book that does nothing but praise, and say that the guy was practically impeccable, which so many of these books do. It's all worshipful, and oh, what a statesman he was. Whereas people at the time thought, you know, he's just a hack lawyer, right? I mean, it's funny how today we think, oh, you know, because of Doris Kearns Goodwin, we think, oh, we're not worthy to stand in his presence. People didn't really think of him that way, right? Oh, we have to memorize his speeches or whatever. I don't find his speeches to be particularly insightful. And in his understanding of the Union, he's just repeating Henry Clay and Joseph Story and Alexander Hamilton, all of whom talk about having an axe to grind, right? I mean, these are people who are inventing the idea of the consolidated, indivisible union out of whole cloth. And I already talked about that a couple of episodes ago, how there is zero evidence for this. Like, don't even bother trying to make the argument. There's zero evidence for it. So we can't look at a revisionist book. So in other words, we have to assume we got it right the first time. We got it right the first time. Everybody who likes Lincoln got it right the first time. So there's no need to revise it. Don't go back and look at the evidence again, citizen. We got it right the first time. Why do you assume that? Maybe we got it wrong the first time. Maybe there's a reason there are so many admiring books of Lincoln. Could it be that the regime we live under is the heir of Lincoln? Could it be that this centralized regime in which states have no powers, cities and towns and whatever, are all subject to the federal government, individuals are subject to the federal government acts without boundaries, makes up powers as it goes along, treats the Constitution with contempt, that this is exactly the outcome of Lincoln's regime? So of course Hillary Clinton loves Lincoln. Of course Barack Obama loves Lincoln. The mystery is why this Christian pastor loves Lincoln. Because, yeah, I know it would make you unpopular not to like him. Or you've heard a particular point of view so long that your brain can't comprehend the possibility that it might be wrong. But for heaven's sake, I mean, we have lived through enough atrocities from the government that we ought to be, at this point, independent enough thinkers to subject all our previous thought to revision. Right? Revision is the refreshing light of truth applied to the cobwebs of our minds. And then he says, some people simply hate the idea of heroes. Wait, are you kidding? That's what he says. So in other words, he thinks that somebody like Tom DiLorenzo, who wrote the great book, The Real Lincoln, sat down and said, I'm going to devote a year of my life to writing a book because I hate heroes, right? Because he's thinking that this is like some leftist book. Like, he can't imagine that anybody other than a leftist would be against Lincoln, when why would a leftist be anything but in favor of Lincoln? So the only possible reason is that you hate hero. That his opponents must be motivated by a hatred of heroes. Well, you know what? My heroes don't do the sorts of things that I just reviewed with you that Lincoln did. Lincoln's greatness cannot be denied. What does that mean? So in other words, I have foreclosed the very possibility of discussion with you because my subjective understanding of greatness has already been applied to this man. Well, that's anti-intellectual to the extreme. So I found it inappropriate. Blessings to you. Come on, don't talk down to me like this. So you've just insulted me, you've insulted my intelligence, you have basically said, I refuse to consider any competing ideas. Even though you yourself know both the pro and the con views of Lincoln, I'm not even willing to listen. Blessings to you! Oh my gosh, boy, do I know this type. Oh my gosh, do I know this type. So, that's where I'll leave that. Think. Think differently. Have the courage to think differently. You know, in one of my books is called, and it's a stupid title. Like, I'm terrible at titles. That's an open secret, everybody. I stink at titles. But I have a book called 33 Questions About American History You're Not Supposed to Ask. And it's one of the books that I actually think I may be proudest of that one out of them all. But in that book, I have a chapter on Lincoln and the Civil War. And by the way, sometimes people say, you know, Woods is obsessed with Lincoln. And I sometimes think these people must know of me just through, like, Wikipedia or what other people say about me or something, because I have thousands of pages of published writing, and maybe not even 0.1% of that has anything to do with Lincoln. So that's really not true. I actually write about a whole lot of things, as it turns out, but I do have a chapter on all this, and I point out that in addition to all the other arguments we've made here, there is one other important factor to bear in mind, and that is, in the pre-modern period in Western civilization, you had the idea that power needed to be divided and that it was good for power to be divided. You had small principalities, and in those principalities, you had different institutions that couldn't be interfered with by the ruler. And you had cities, and you had universities, and you had guilds, and you had the church, and all these different institutions, and each one had its own liberties that couldn't be overridden by a central authority. But then in the modern period, you get this idea that the central authority is one and indivisible, and all of you peons should shut up and obey. And if we have states or smaller institutions, well, they don't have liberties of their own. They have whatever liberties we choose to acknowledge and grant to them. Lincoln is a creature of that. That's what gave us the atrocities of the French Revolution. That's what gave us the atrocities of the 20th century, these super powerful centralized states. That's what he gave us. Yes, you can abolish slavery with that. And you can also give the world total war, the likes of which had never been seen, totalitarian revolutions. And yes, I know no one's ever allowed to quote any Southerner because that means you're a neo-Confederate and all this that the seven-year-olds say. But isn't it interesting that Robert E. Lee said to the great British libertarian Lord Acton, he said, the consolidation of the states into one vast republic, sure to be aggressive abroad and despotic at home, will be the certain precursor of that ruin which has overwhelmed all those that have preceded it. Now, is that not a foretaste of what was to come? He saw that. The consolidation of the states is going to give us this outcome. No, this is not heroic. No, I don't cheer this. And yes, I am a revisionist. All right, that's it today, everybody. LibertyClassroom.com to learn real history, to learn more stuff like what you heard today. And this week, up through October 11th, join and then contact me through the contact page. Get an autographed, personalized copy of Rollback. I think you'll enjoy that book. Don't forget, tweet me some questions for Walter Block and Mark Sisson at Thomas E. Woods. And we will see you tomorrow. Thanks, everybody.
The Tom Woods Show.